You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, powered by Interstate Batteries. From your truck to your trail camera, Interstate Batteries has you covered. Visit your local Interstate Battery store today or online at interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Welcome to the Hardworking Hunter Podcast. Here I plan to bring you the good, the bad, and the ugly of some amazing adventure stories, as well as share some lessons learned over years of hunting experience. You can find out more about Hardworking Hunter, including films and other articles, at hardworkinghunter.com. What's up, guys? Welcome to the Hardworking Hunter Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Kenner. And this being the first podcast, I kind of figure I would just go in and describe myself, describe who and what Hardworking Hunter is, maybe talk about some future plans. So with that, like I said, my name is Zach Kenner, and I grew up in Eastern Washington, a little rural community. Grew up in a country home where I had access to guns and bows and arrows and things to shoot at, and not really a lot of room to get into trouble. So needless to say, I was ruined from day one. Yeah, I had a outdoorsy family. We always went camping and whatnot when I was younger. So my dad hunted a lot when I was young. And even now, my mom and my sister will also still hunt. So that's, you know, I'd probably have to say that I definitely got my influence from my dad. You know, he helped both me and my sister when we were little at, you know, passing hunter safety and getting our first deer and our first duck and, you know, whatnot. And took us on some coyote hunts and just definitely laid the pavement to, you know, the hunters that we are today. And, you know, I'd say is the thing that I am glad I kind of gathered from him the most was this idea that you don't have to just hunt in your backyard. I mean, that like the whole West is your backyard. And I've definitely taken that to heart, you know, as I've gotten older and ventured out to multiple states per year. Definitely very grateful for that. You know, when I was younger, I was always seeing him, you know, coming home with pickup loads full of meat and full of horns and, you know, where'd you go this time? And, oh, you know, just got back from Montana and shot me a deer and an elk and, you know, he'd go with two or three guys and they all get their deer. And so it, like literally just the pickup would be full of meat and coolers. And so that's kind of, you know, my whole life I've just been around it and it's definitely shaped me. So kind of fast forward, you know, to, well, going through high school, I was like, you know, hunting TV was the big thing. And I was able to pick up a little handyman camera and just started filming everything, you know. And so, you know, anything from trying to film deer hunts to coyote hunts to even shooting pigeons. But I think the first kind of like little film I put together was pretty much all ground squirrels. Me and my hunting partner Derek at the time would go out turkey hunting in the spring and end up on these colonies of ground squirrels and just sit there for hours shooting those things and filming it. And you know, oh, you know, just I shot that one, you know, 300 yards and just, you know, just playing, having a good time, being high school kids, you know. But those were the first kind of little music video hunting films I made. And you know, then down the road, I ended up going to a full draw film tour. And, you know, sitting there in that theater and, you know, watching filmmakers like Donnie Vincent or Jason Matzinger and I know that first one I went to, those two guys had a film in it, and I was just blown away. Like, this is some of the coolest hunting video I've ever seen, and it was then and there, I was like, I want to make those. You know, I know I can. We've seen so many amazing amazing encounters, you know, with wildlife out hunting in the mountains that I know we could make some really cool videos like this. So it was that year the Canon XA20 came out, and it's a really good HD zoom camera, really kind of, compact and lightweight. And I bought that one as kind of my first real camera. And like if I wanted to kind of do this, I needed to step up my game. And that year I ended up capturing some pretty good hunts, and I ended up capturing my dad taking a giant muley buck in Idaho. And it was that video then, I had it, but I didn't really have a computer that was capable of editing HD video. And so, a whole year came and went, and another season was upon us. And still I filmed some more hunts. And that fall that I finally got a computer, and I was like, I have to actually, get this thing edited and make a submission, because, I wanted to be on the Full Draw Film Tour. And so that year I edited up that mule deer hunt from the first year that I had that camera and entered it, and I didn't make it. But I learned a lot in, learning how to edit and putting together a film. And I learned so much in editing that was going to help me in the filming side of it in the next season, learning what shots I needed, a lot of B-roll stuff, but and then long story short, the next day or the next year, I ended up entering with a film called True Conservation, and that was the film that played on the Full Draw Film Tour this last summer. And so that was really cool to kind of go from I want to be on this, I want to make these films, to getting close but not making it, and then giving a line of fire under me to try harder, and then the next year actually making it and seeing my video played in front of thousands of people across the West. So that was really, really, really cool. Very exciting, very humbled by it, and just can't wait to do more, and so yeah, filming my own hunts, and I needed some way to put them out there. And so that's kind of where I had to come up with a name. And it's hard to come up with a name these days that isn't already taken. And so when I threw the words together, Hardworking Hunter, it just kind of fit. The West is hard to hunt. The mountains are big. There's a lot of roadless areas, and that's where I like to go. So, hardworking hunter kind of fits. But then there's the other side of it, because it's kind of a twist on words, and because I'm also the guy that works my tail off year round so that I can even have that opportunity to go hunt in the fall. Putting in crazy hours in the summertime just so, I can take a lot of time off in September and go hunt. So, hardworking hunter isn't just while you're hunting, but even, in your normal day-to-day life, you're working hard so that you can hunt. And I really like the name. I don't like to think of myself as the hardworking hunter. I like to think of everyone that's out there trying to do it. It's a brand that not only I'd be willing to wear, but everyone else would be willing to wear, and it represents them as well. Yeah, I thought it was a pretty good name, and I've been making films for 3, 4, 5 years now, and I think adding a podcast to it kind of helps you get a more insight than just the films. Because right now, I'm definitely active on Instagram, Facebook, and so people have been following along my adventures there, but there's still not a lot of detail. They say a picture is worth 1,000 words, but here I'm actually gonna try and present those 1,000 words. So I think this will be fun. Definitely gonna have some guests on. I like to have a lot of guests that you guys haven't heard of on other Western hunting podcasts, as well as some that have. The the big names in the industry are big names for a reason. So, you know, definitely be exciting to have a few of those guys on that, you know, are out there doing it every day, you know, whether they're guides or just well-known hunters. You know, we'll definitely have some of them on as well. Yeah, I think I have a lot of insight to offer. You know, I've been hunting the West my whole life, and Western hunting is what I live to do. In fact, I love it so much that, you know, sheep has kind of been on my radar for quite a while, and, you know, I can't seem to draw a tag, and they're to have a guide, to hire a guide, is just doesn't quite fit into my pay scale. So, you know, I actually decided to uproot from Eastern Washington and move to Alaska. You know, this is a new thing. I just did this last year. And what that will do is allow me to hunt as a resident this coming fall, and which includes sheep and goat. And those are kind of my two target animals. I definitely plan on hunting all the Alaskan species, but you know, that's how dedicated I am, is to just uproot and move because I want to hunt sheep. And, you know, I mean, I'm fortunate right now. I don't have a family. So, you know, to uproot like that wasn't too big of a deal. And, I mean, I still, you know, I don't know how long I'll stay. We'll see how it goes. But I still plan on coming down and hunting the lower 48 on, you know, some mule deer hunts, because mule deer is definitely where my heart is. And then, you know, a few elk hunts, I'm sure, as well. So, yeah, you know, that's kind of the future. The future is making more really cool films and hunting Alaska. And I'm going to kind of wrap up this podcast with my most recent story. So my buddy that I work with up here in Alaska just got his residency actually this last September. So he was eligible for some late season goat tags and was able to snag one. And we went on a pretty epic mountain goat hunt here in Alaska. So, you know, he's actually from the Midwest. He's actually from Iowa. And so it was kind of a different hunt for him. He'd never actually been on a true mountain hunt before. He hunted elk in Colorado once, but, you know, he said it just didn't quite compare, you know, with warmer weather. You know, we hunted these goats in November. And so I'm like, yeah, dude, let's do it. You know, I mean, I kind of really wanted to go out on, you know, an adventure for this season, because I kind of limited my hunting this fall due to me moving to Alaska. So, yeah, this was a new experience for both of us, because him never really mountain hunting and me never really hunting in Alaska. I didn't know what to expect. You know, I just kind of approached it as any other Western hunt. And off we went. It was a boat hunt. We got dropped off by a boat and then had to go up and hunt these goats. And we stayed at the first spot for a few days. It was where we could see a few goats from the boat, actually, the day we arrived. And hiked up in there, got right up on top of these cliffs where the goats were, and just could not find them. Could not see a goat anywhere. And you can't quite see everything when you're standing on top of the cliffs anyway. So you're kind of like moving around and kind of getting different angles and seeing what you can see. And then that evening, the wind picked up and just blew us off the mountain. I mean, I got windburnt on my face, for what bit of my face was exposed. And so off the mountain we went. And it took us a long time to get there. It actually took us a day and a half just to get there. And my buddy was pretty tired. You know, I mean, he isn't a very big guy. And so packing all that gear up the mountain and really not preparing for such an event. You know, he was like, well, what do you want to do? And, you know, I'm like, well, we can. It was really frustrating not being able to see the goats from the top. So I kind of threw out the option of, well, we can go and, you know, call the boat back and move up the bank and try and find him again, and then head up after him again like we did the first day. And now that we know a better trail in here, it won't take us as long. And it's like, or, you know, we can just kind of go hunt from the boat and see if we can find one. And yeah, by the time we got, we opted to go back to the boat and just see what we could see. And by the time we did all that, he was beat. You know, this was day 4. Lots of rain, lots of bad weather, cold, you know, and he was just beat. And it didn't help that when we got to the boat, we went around the bay and looked up into the area where the goats were, literally right where we were standing. There was, or the day before, there was 3 goats standing there. He was a little discouraged, you know, and I don't blame him, but it's just like that, and that just sucked. And he's like, I'm tired, and I don't think it's really safe for me to be up there anymore. And I agreed. I was like, yeah, you know, I mean, I don't want you to get up there and trip and fall and hurt yourself, you know, that'd be worst. So we decided to go troll for some king salmon and, you know, right there along the shorelines and just kind of play off the day. And we weren't getting anything. Nothing was biting. And literally we were like calling it a day. Let's go back to the boat launch and pack up our stuff and head back. You know, it was fun. We learned a lot. Got to see some goats. Just didn't get a shot. And so as we're making our way out of this little cove, the boat driver looks up and he's like, oh, look, there's a goat. And sure enough, like, we're in a completely different area. Still within the unit, but, you know, quite a ways from where we first had originally hiked in. You know, here's this goat, and it's a lone goat. It's quite a ways up there, so, you know, it's hard to tell right off the bat whether it's a Billy or a Nanny. But legally, as long as it's a lone goat, he could shoot a Nanny, and he was willing to. You know, he had never killed a goat and just wanted to get one under his belt. So we bail off the boat and, you know, kind of get up there and get things set up. And sure enough, makes a freaking epic shot on this goat. And runs into the trees and kind of disappears. And like, yeah, I'm pretty sure you waylaid him. And we get up there. And turns out he kind of hit a little low, and the goat had just kind of went up and bedded up and was still alive. So we ended up having to finish him off. But then when we finished him off, the goat made a death roll off the cliff and fell like 400 feet. And so then it's like by the time we got around and actually got to the goat, it was dark. And we were up there, you know, in headlamps, boning the thing out in the headlamps. And then it started to snow, and a huge snowstorm was moving in, and like I kind of looked at him, and we just got the kind of finished cutting the goat up, and I looked at him, and I says, if it snows more than 2 inches, it is not safe to be up here, because we were kind of up in the rocks, you know, and I kind of looked at him, and I go, well, we got this thing cut up, and, you know, it's good to leave here overnight. I said, we should probably bail off this mountain. You know, there's a lot of variables there, you know, fatigue. We had left all of our gear at the bottom of the mountain, kind of because we knew we had to go up and get the goat. So we're like, well, we'll just go up, take minimal light packs, and come down heavy. Yeah, so that didn't work out. You know, we had to bail off the mountain just to survive, really. I mean, we couldn't just sit there and wait the storm out. I mean, we didn't have any rain gear, and we were just getting wet. So by the time we got back down and got to our tent and got everything set up, we were just sopping wet. It was 2:30 in the morning and just tired. I mean, that just the definition to describe us was just tired. And so, yeah, the next morning, you know, wake up, got a good breakfast, and I looked at him and I said, well, how you feel? You know, you think you can go up there and go get him? And he's like, "I'm, let's do it. You know, I'm in." So sure enough, you know, we had to trip him because he was just a massive, massive Billy. Almost 50-incher, right at Boone and Crockett. But his body was just immense. I mean, this was an old 9-year-old Billy. And so we just got so lucky, you know, that it all kind of came together. And I've got most of this on film. And one day I'll chop it up and kind of make it into a short little YouTube video, I think. But just an epic adventure. I, you know, there's so many little details, you know, like looking at him and, you know, when it started snowing and going, if it gets 2 inches of snow or more, we got to bail off. You know, that's something that you just don't get in a video. And so that's why I think this podcast is kind of cool, because I can kind of go through and describe some of these hunting stories, whether they're new stories or even old ones that I have films of already, and be able to add, you know, a lot more detail and kind of paint a better picture as to what happened and lessons that we learned. And you know, from this hunt, the lessons I learned on hunting kind of, you know, the Alaskan coast. This was interesting because I'd never really been in thick Devil's Club before. And I hope that you never have to either. But what I learned about Devil's Club is, you know, it hurts a lot at first because you're not used to getting thorns. And if you don't know what Devil's Club is, it's a really thorny kind of, oh man, I don't even know how to describe it. It'll grow in kind of more wet areas, and it in the wintertime it doesn't have the leaves. Well, the leaves grow huge leaves, and everything is thorny. I mean, that's the best way I can describe it, is, and not thorn like thorn, not like rose bushes, but more like, just lots and lots of little itty bitty thorns. And they, you know, they break off in you, and I was pushing thorns out of my hands for a month after we got done with that. But what I learned there is the plant itself is pretty brittle, and I think with a little pair of hand shears, you could just kind of clip your way through if you needed to. Most of the time, you can just step on them, you know, and kind of push them out of the way. Or if you wore leather gloves, that was another thing. I think it won't go through the leather gloves, so you'll be able to use your hands to kind of push them out of the way. But they're definitely getting in there, and it'll probably work their way through. And so, you know, you take a pair of leather gloves on a hunt with Devil's Club, they're probably one-time use gloves. You know, use them for that hunt and throw them out. Another thing I learned, the Devil's Club was definitely the biggest. The other thing was kind of how to fight those alders. There's a lot of alder fields up here, and it's just a thick jungle. And, you know, if you can avoid them, that'd be the best. But the only way to do that is mostly going through rocks, like, you know, chutes and cliffs and whatnot, because that's where they're not growing. And they're just, the smaller the pack, the better, because your pack catches on every little hang up. And, you know, like that first stop, that, and it took us a day and a half to get there. It wasn't that far. It was only like 4 or 5 miles, but it was just straight up through the nastiest alder patches. And, you know, we got cliffed out a few times too, not knowing the area. And so we had to backtrack and try to take a different trail. And, oh man, it was a nightmare. Like, you know, I mean, I could go hunt Wyoming or Idaho and hunt, you know, high country mountains and walk miles. You know, it's like, oh, I don't know, we did 20 miles in a day. But there it was like I did 4 or 5 miles in a day, and it killed me. You know, it's just so much more stress that with the alders grabbing a hold of you as you're trying to push up through them. You know, so it's definitely a learning experience. I remember I looked at my buddy. Oh man, during day one, when we're struggling climbing up through these alder fields, and he was having a hard time, I turned around and looked at him and I go, the one thing I wanted you to get out of this hunt is I wanted you, when this was all over, I wanted you to turn around and look at me and go, that was one of the hardest things I've ever done, and I can't wait till next season to do it again. And he kind of laughed at me, and, you know, really wasn't sure about it at first, but I tell you what, after the whole hunt was over, and then we ended up shooting that really awesome billy, he looked at me and he goes, it's exactly like you say. You know, he goes, I'm beat. I really don't want to be on the mountain for another solid week. But during that week, all he could think about was being back up on that mountain. And so that was kind of special for me, you know, being able to take somebody that really hasn't mountain hunted before and put him in that situation, and he did well. He did really well. So, yeah, you know, and that's kind of how the whole West is. You know, I like to go into a hunt and by the end of it be dog dead tired and just can't think about anything but going back. you know. So now that's kind of what Hardworking Hunter is about and what this podcast will be about. And I can't wait to share more stories with you guys and more tips and tactics. So definitely subscribe to the channel, the Hardworking Hunter YouTube channel. Subscribe to me on Instagram. My Instagram is hard_working_hunter. You can do me on Facebook as well, just Hardworking Hunter. And subscribe to this podcast. You know, more subscriptions the better, and definitely excited to be putting out some awesome Western hunting content. So tune in next time. Thanks, guys.